You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Monday, May 9th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, a pretty good weekend for the Guardians, taking 3 out of 4 from the Toronto Blue Jays. They wrap up the quick 6-game homestand there at 4-2, beating a couple of really good teams. And really, the story here was the offense actually, you know, coming back to life after struggling during that 10-game road trip.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, especially, you know, I thought Sunday's win kind of encapsulated that whole thing. You know, we saw the ability to come back, and that was the one thing you had to wonder about this Cleveland team. You know, did they have enough firepower to, you know, rally late and win games in the late innings? And, you know, they scored 2 in the 8th. On Sunday to beat the Blue Jays, you know, 4-3. That was really encouraging. And they did it with some power too. Owen Miller hits a home run, and, you know, then they do it, Mercado drives in the game winner.
Yeah. You're talking about firepower, and no one is happier than Framil Reyes to be sort of more himself at the plate right now. The firepower is what they expect out of the 6'4", 260 pounder. And he certainly provided that, hit a home run on Saturday in the doubleheader and had three hits that day, had 3 hits Sunday, batting over .500 in his last 6 games. And really looks more like himself, hitting the ball up the middle, taking singles when he can get them, but not looking like he's completely lost at the plate as he was the previous week and a half.
Yeah, you could tell that hopefully he's turned the corner. You know, like you said, that game where he had the 3 singles was the kind of the tip of the iceberg. Then he started to drive the ball. You know, those 3 singles were, you know, one was to center, one was to left, one was to right field. Then, you know, you saw him start driving the ball. And I think it looked like he relaxed, Joe. It looked like he's, you know, he had the weight of the world on him. You know, I think he knew more than anybody that he was letting the club down, and finally just started a different approach. He listened to, you know, Chris Valleca and Victor Rodriguez and the guys, you know, the hitting coaches to, you know, pick out one pitch and try to do some damage on it. Don't try to hit 3-run home runs when there's nobody on base, and that's what he was trying to do.
Well, and then we talked to him late Saturday after the second game of the doubleheader, and he talked in talking to him, he knew what pitches were coming. He knew which pitches he was seeing and laying off and what to expect. So when he's talking like that and you can see the wheels turning in his process there, it sort of gave you a little confidence that, you know, it's not just walk up to the plate and guess what's coming and swing at it. You know, there was an approach. It wasn't working out for him maybe on the road, but at home, like you said, he felt a little more relaxed. Here's the problem. He's batting .409 at home. He's batting like .112 on the road. So,
ouch.
You know, their 6-game trip starts tonight in Chicago and Minnesota. And this is where it's going to, you know, come through. Is Framil back to where he needs to be? And will that pay off in some base hits on the road, not just, you know, another 0-for-26 with 18 strikeouts sort of streak?
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road, I guess. Oh, that's bad. No, but yeah. And I think, you know, I think sometimes like power hitters get it in their mind that if if they hit a single, it's like you go fishing and you catch a little fish, you throw it back. You know, they're not interested in singles. Napoli, you used to say, they didn't sign me to hit singles. I'm here to hit home runs. And when they don't hit home runs, when they don't do damage, I think the hole gets bigger and bigger. And hopefully, you know, Franmil knows that sometimes you can win a game with a single. You don't have to hit it 400 feet. And we'll have to see if he can bottle what he had at home and take it on the road here against the White Sox and the Twins.
You mentioned Owen Miller and just a lot of confidence at the plate right now. He's a totally different hitter than he was maybe in May of last year when he first came up and they sent him back down after struggling, and he came up at the end of the season, figured some things out. And then Tito said during the off season was when it really sort of clicked in, and ever since spring training, he's looked like a completely different hitter. Owen Miller looks like you can put him anywhere in that Cleveland lineup and he's going to hit. He's hit second. He's hit, you know, and now the last 10 games, he's hitting the cleanup spot. Anywhere that you put him, it looks like he's going to be able to produce.
Yeah, you know, and I think the big thing is, Joe, you know, like you said, confidence. And he's turning on the ball, and he's having success turning on the ball. You know, he's pulling it to left field, whereas last year, I think when he tried to pull the ball, you know, he didn't have that success. So, you know, we're seeing him drive the ball, seeing him drive in runs. I think that home run Sunday was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and that home run came off of a left-hander in, you know, Tim Mazey from Toronto. And then that sort of forced them to go to Adam Simber, the former Cleveland reliever, and he came in. Walked Andrés Giménez, you know, gave up the game-winning single to Oscar Mercado up the middle. Mercado sort of, he said the first pitch that Simber threw him, it you know, he's not exactly the hardest thrower in the world, and Simber sort of screwed himself into the ground on that first swing, and then told himself after that, okay, just, you know, lay off the sliders, lay off the soft stuff, and look for something over the middle. And he got an elevated fastball and just chopped it in, or, you know, lined it into center field for the game-winning hit. It was a lot of fun to watch a young guy, you know, sort of work through that process and you know, figure things out at the plate as he did just in that one at bat.
Yeah, Mercado has been an interesting guy to watch. I mean, you know, he's had some success, you know, driving in runs. He doesn't have that great a batting average, but you know, maybe, you know, he's starting to kind of rediscover what he was 2 years ago and can, you know, get some momentum going. And Simber, that was a, you know, nice job against Simber because he was pitching very, very well for Toronto. You know, he had great numbers coming in, and you know, Cleveland did what they should have done against them.
Yeah, what was he, 4-1? I think he had was leading the majors in total wins. On the way into the series. So, and that was the first time I think we had seen him in the series.
Right.
They waited until the very end to bring him in. A couple other guys who had nice weekends and were really productive. Josh Naylor and Andrés Giménez. You know, Naylor seems to have really settled in and, you know, found some consistency. Just, again, everything that he's doing this year is just completely unexpected. I for one, thought that it was going to be midseason before we saw him back and healthy enough to be contributing. And he's not only healthy enough, he's out there, you know, driving in runs, driving in big runs in wins earlier in the homestand. And, you know, again, the fire and the energy that he provides and the leadership that he provides is just, it's so much more important than what he's even doing in the outfield.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's, right now he's a comeback player of the year to me. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody else in the American League or the National League that, you know, are doing, you know, have overcome something like, you know, a big injury or whatever from last season. But Naylor, I don't think anyone has come back as far as Naylor has. And, you know, I don't know. Do you like him more in right field or first base, Joe? I know he's dropped a couple balls there at first base, but, you know, I just really appreciate, like you said, the hustle and the way he's swinging the bat, you know, lefties, righties, he's doing a nice job.
Yeah, I think the one thing you can say about Naylor's defense is that he's not letting, if he does make a mistake, if he does drop a ball like he did on the one play earlier yesterday, you know, had it, those were like easy plays that are, you know, in the glove. This is a comebacker to Connor Pilkington. He throws over to first and it just doesn't stick in his glove. The one thing you could say about Josh Naylor is that play doesn't stick with him. It doesn't carry over into the next play. It doesn't snowball or anything like that. It becomes, you know, a learning point for him. I would be shocked if we saw him make any more of those mental mistakes and dropping the ball, over the next couple of weeks here. I like his versatility, but if you want to talk about defense, you got to talk about Andrés Giménez and what he was able to do over the last couple of games here. Just at second base, you know, robbing a couple of Toronto hits. Santiago Espinal tries to take off Tristan McKenzie's head with a line drive, and coming up behind him is Andrés Giménez with a nice stop and throw to get Espinal. I think there were several plays over this homestand that Andrés Giménez proved that he's, you know, if not an excellent defender at second base, you know, should probably be playing shortstop for this team on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think he's moving in that direction, Joe. Definitely. That game, the second game of the doubleheader with McKenzie on the mound, I mean, he made like three great plays. You know, Gurriel almost knocked him down with the line drive in the first inning. He catches that ball, kind of does that little 360 on his hip and throws him out. Then the throw to get Espinal at the relay to get Espinal at third. And then again, Espinal in the fifth, he gets him with another kind of hip turn and throw. It just really acrobatic plays and plays, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of last year. We just didn't see that because, you know, he came from the Mets with the reputation of being that kind of defender. But we're starting to see it now, and I think it goes hand in hand with the success he's having as at the plate.
Right. I think it's both ways, because you saw what he did in that series in Oakland where Amed Rosario was resting his wrist and they put him at short for all three games. And it was almost like, you know, what happened to Rosario last year. When you moved Rosario to shortstop, Rosario took off offensively. You put Giménez at shortstop, Giménez takes off offensively. There's only one shortstop on the field. It's tough. It's tough. But, you know, who gets the golden goose? Who gets the position where their offense gets to sort of take off at that point? I think right now you got to get Rosario back to, you know, back going like he was last year. But, you know, maybe Rosario is one of those guys, the notorious guys who don't hit in the cold weather. And when it starts to warm up, he warms up. And, you know, what would this offense look like top to bottom if Rosario was one of those guys hitting 300 like he was last year?
Yeah, you know, when we've seen him at his best and, you know, he's hitting line drives. And the one aspect of his game that I think probably people, you know, don't appreciate as much is his speed. You know, once he gets on the bases, he's a different, you know, he really is a difference maker. So, you know, if Ahmed can get going and, you know, start reaching base and driving the ball to all parts of the park, I think, you know, he adds his speed gives you an extra dimension there.
Well, Rosario was the number two hitter in front of Jose Ramirez last year. The number two hitter in front of Jose Ramirez this year has been Stephen Kwan on a regular basis. And really, if you look at it, you wrote about this last week, but is Stephen Kwan sort of the glue that holds together the top of that Guardians lineup? And you can go back, five, six games here. when Kwan got back to playing regularly after that Oakland series and you know, feeling healthy with the, he had missed a few games with the tight hamstring. That's when everybody started contributing up and down the lineup. And it wasn't just look at Jose Ramirez for a big hit and a big RBI. It was everybody was chipping in. It's funny, it goes in cycles. The first week and a half or so of the season, it was Ramirez and everybody contributing. Then it was only Jose contributing for, you know, most of that road trip. And now it's back to everybody sort of chipping in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a good point about Kwan. He really helps, you know, the top three of that lineup, Straw, Kwan, Ramirez. You know, Straw didn't have that great of a, you know, a series against Toronto, but, you know, he gives you defense, he gives you speed. And Kwan, you know, is kind of the same kind of player. They're cut from the same cloth almost. You know, one's a righty, one's a lefty. You know, when they do get on base, they can, you know, their speed factors into it. And, you know, he's interesting to watch. He's, you know, like we've been saying all along, he doesn't strike out that much. He makes contact and he makes things happen on the bases.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a really good point because it's the point that you made earlier in the week. That's what I'm saying. You know, of course you think it's a good point. You came up with it. Yeah, as far as Straw goes, I think his contribution, if he's getting on base and hitting the ball the way that he's able to, that's great. He also gives Tito, you know, peace of mind and just, you know, reassurance. He plays every day. He's out there. That's one thing, you know, leadoff hitter and center fielder that Tito doesn't have to worry about, just pencils it in every game. He plays every day. I think the reassurance that he gives, you know, Francona is probably as much an important part of his game as anything else. You know, the one thing we haven't really talked about here, we've been talking for 15 minutes about all these hitters and this offense. You know, the pitching wasn't all that bad this week and this weekend. Really, the only start that stands out as, you know, one that you would have questions about would be Shane Bieber getting roughed up in the opening game of the doubleheader on Saturday against Toronto. I think they put up 6 runs on him. And, you know, just, you know, what are we seeing there and what are the concerns there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was, you know, Bieber's first start ever in the big leagues with Cleveland. That he didn't register a strikeout, went 3 1/3, gave up 8 hits, 3 walks, and, you know, it was a brutal day out weather-wise. But, you know, he retires the first 5 guys and then, you know, gives up 4 runs in the second inning, and that was basically the ball game. And I think, you know, what we've seen from him, you know, in his first 4 or 5 starts this season, we just haven't seen the velocity that Shane had, you know, the last couple of years, especially in his Cy Young year. I was looking at Baseball Savant in 2020, his 4-seam fastball, you know, average velo was 94.1. Right now it's at 90.6. The cut fastball 2020, the average velo was 89.2. Now it's 86. So, you know, there is a little drop in the velocity, and I don't know. I think he's healthy, Joe. But what do you see? What do you think that hold up in velocity is?
I think he's healthy. There's a difference between being healthy and being strong, and I think that's where that's sort of that gray area that we're in right now with him. I don't think there's anything physically holding him back, but I do think that he's not built up and strong enough at the point like he was during that 2020 season, like you're saying. Now, again, you got to remember the 2020 season, that's a smaller sample size. Yeah. He made what, half, not even half the start, 12 starts that year? Something.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe, you know, 18 starts. I don't know.
Yeah. It was significantly fewer starts. So the sample size is going to be smaller. Obviously, the velocity numbers are going to be higher in that year in terms of average. But you're right. It's a noticeable difference that he's not, you know, striking guys out with 92, 93, 94. He's, you know, getting to those numbers right now is sort of an accomplishment for him. I do think that as he continues to work, as he continues to, you know, go through the season, he's going to get stronger and get more built up. But I think expecting it to be just all of a sudden, oh, one day he's throwing 92, 93, 94. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you got to be patient with it. And I think he realizes that he's got to be patient with it. And I know that he's been asked about his velocity a couple of times, and he kind of bristles every time he talks about it. So, you know, he knows, you know, that it's on his mind, but the hope is that he doesn't do anything to sort of deviate or change that's going to cause another injury and cause him to miss games.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I think last year he probably learned a lesson. You know, he was pitching with that shoulder for, it wasn't just that one game against Seattle where it popped up. You know, it had been an issue, I think. You know, he was dealing with it, and I don't think he wants to go through that again. So I think he wants to make sure, you know, everything is set, that he's healthy, and that, you know, I mean, he's got, I mean, there's like, what, 25, 24, 26 more starts. I mean, maybe 25 more starts he's got this season. I think he should be all right. And he really took that game tough. You know, he took the loss and kind of shouldered that loss. So it's going to be interesting to see how he comes back and what his next start looks like.
Yeah. And you know, don't just go out there and try to throw 94 just to throw 94 and satisfy people who are asking questions or whatever. You know, there's a plan, and you know, talk to your coaches and make sure that you're reaching your milestones and your progressions, you know, in a way that's healthy and naturally, as opposed to trying to push something where all of a sudden we're dealing with a long-term injury that would be even worse. He avoided surgery, you know, the first injury. That's a blessing. Learn from that and move forward. You know, you don't want to have to do something where you go and have to have them open you up.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. I don't think he'll do anything crazy.
I just wanted to go back one more, you know, guy to touch on, Aaron Civale, who after that first inning on what was it, Thursday?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, after the
against the Blue Jays
early in that game, you know, it looked like the world was crashing down again. But then Civale sort of rights the ship, and he was lights out. What do you make of Civale's last start?
Yeah, that was encouraging. That was his best start of the year. I think he readily admitted that. You know, the first inning he gives up a two run laser to a Vlad Guerrero Jr. And you're sitting there thinking, uh-oh, here we go again. But then he came back. He struck out the two guys to end the inning. Struck out the next two guys to start the second, and he was on his way. Showed a great curveball, Joe. And I think, you know, what Civale throws five or six, maybe seven different pitches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some guys, you know, struggle with that. You know, it's hard to control all those pitches at once. You know, Savali's the kind of guy that says, I like to throw a lot of pitches because if one isn't working, I can go to another one. And obviously the curveball was working against Toronto. And I think at the end of that start, Indians came back, and I mean, the Guardians won that game 6-5. Mm-hmm. And after the game, he said, you know, that's something for me to build on. You know, that's the start I was looking for. And we'll have to see how he carries that into his next outing.
Yeah. Well, talk about the next outing. These guys are on the road now. You're there in Chicago with them. Zach Plesac going tonight. Last time Zach Plesac started an early May game in Chicago, it didn't go so well for them last year. What are we looking for in this series? Both teams coming in hot, Guardians winning 7 out of 9. And I think Chicago's what, 6 in a row?
Yes. Chicago's won 6 in a row, you know, 7 of the last 10. Guardians, what, won, like you said, 7 of their last 9. I think we're going to see a different Chicago team than we saw in Cleveland. Moncada's coming back. He should be back tonight. Joe Kelly, the reliever, should be ready to make his Chicago debut. They're a little healthier, And hopefully for, and if for those White Sox fans out there, they're playing better defense, because that was a circus in Cleveland, Joe, when what we saw in those those 3 or 4 games.
Yeah, Tim Anderson should be having nightmares about ground balls coming at him at Progressive Field, but he's at home this week. So, all right, Hoynsie, we will check in again tomorrow, another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. Hey, for our listeners here, don't forget to subscribe to Subtext. You can send a text to 216-298-4346 or log on to cleveland.com/subtext, $3.99 a month, and you get information, updates, and insight from Paul and myself, from the clubhouse, from every time we talk to Tito immediately after that. So you're the first to know any changes or moves here with the team. Hoynsie, have a great week on the road, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right, Joe.